You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Minnesota. Good morning to you. Mike McNamara. Oh, it's going to be another awesome week of All Marine Radio and a post-traumatic one. So do a little speaking at lunch today. They have a University of Minnesota, Minnesota State University, Mankato. Got to get that right. Has a veterans luncheon today. And so, for the second year in a row, I get to be the guest speaker there. Boom! You know what that means? That means I didn't screw it up the first time. That's what that means. But I'm excited to do that. And then tonight at 7, here at Minnesota State University, Mankato, I'll do post-traumatic winning. And this is the first place I ever did it, a year ago. Yeah, this is where it debuted in public. And it's a lot different, a lot more powerful, I think. And people are going to find that out. So it's a lot wiser. And so anyway, looking forward to that. The days, as you've heard me say, the days that I do post-traumatic winning, it's always like I always get geeked about it, right? I always get geeked about it, and I slept like shit last night. Yeah, I mean, and I don't normally sleep great, so when I say I slept like shit, yeah, you could take that to the bank. You could take that to the bank. I don't know why, man. I was like, I don't know. Anyway, no bueno. But you know what? Doesn't matter to me. I flew up here yesterday. I left Sacramento in the morning, flew to Denver. Didn't even have time. The girl told me, I don't know if you have time. Because I said, could I go get a sandwich before I get on the plane so I have something to eat? She goes, oh, you got to hurry. And I was like, holy smokes, man. So anyway, but I did. Got the sandwich. And you know what? Think about this. I need to have F-18 man on. Not to talk about F-18s. But just to talk about aviation issues, traveling. He's a pilot now. And so I need to have him on to talk about, like, he travels professionally. What are best practices? You know what I don't how does luggage get to where it's supposed to be? You know, we see people, you know, conveyor belts, and then people throwing it into carts, and then carts going someplace. Is it the same sorting process that FedEx uses? I mean, is that the way they do it? And then there's some kind of, you know, computer arm that pushes luggage to where it's supposed to be. Is it people doing that? I don't know. Because, I mean, for instance, all the luggage on my plane shows up. My next flight left 45 minutes later. My bag was on a flight. How does that happen? Yeah. How does that happen? So, anyway, probably not a miracle. Okay? Probably not a miracle. But I don't know how it works. So, but think about this. Years ago, right, you got on a plane and you, they served food. Right? They served food. Now, you could decline their food. And, I don't know, I guess a lot of people did, but, and so I, now they don't even serve food. Like, you could buy, like, they'll come by with boxes of stuff, right? You want, would you care to purchase something? And then the only people that used to, you know, bring food on a plane were, like, weird people, right? I mean, they would be wearing Birkenstock shoes and shit like that. So, yeah, me. Go, I get a turkey sandwich with Swiss cheese, one of my go-tos. Right, grab the mayonnaise and the mustard, a little container, get some chips, boom. I got a great meal on the plane. But that whole industry went away. Think about that. I mean, you know, remember all the trays and, you know, would you like chicken or beef, right, all that? Boom, done. I think the only flights they do that on are flights that go overseas. So, anyway, just kind of interesting traveling. I got to Minneapolis. Now, this is how post-traumatic winning, like, is like, I can never get away from it. I land, and I'm driving to Mankato, which is about 70 miles south-southwest of Minneapolis. So, land, I don't know, about 38 degrees, and get my rental car, and head south. I got pulled over by the police for doing a little excessive speeding. And it wasn't much, right? And the car had California plates. So the Minnesota State Trooper comes up, and he said, is this your car? And I said, no, it's a rental. And he said, your plates are California plates, and it's California license. I said, yeah, I just picked the California plates because, right, it's home to me. He said, ah. He said, well, you're over the speed limit. Are you aware of the speed limit in Minnesota? And I said, 75. And he said, no. He said, 65. I said, therein lies the problem. So anyway, he said, okay, normally is our procedure, you know, we'll give you a warning. Hold on. And he comes back, and he says, so where are you headed? And I said, he comes back and he says, gives me the piece of paper that's a warning. And he said, so where are you headed? I said, I'm going to Mankato to speak. He said, well, what do you talk about? And now here it goes, right? And I said, I teach people how to turn, I talk about PTSD. And I teach people how to turn really, really shitty stuff that you guys live through into joy. And he just looks at me and he says, how do you do that? Can I have your card? And I said, yeah, here you go. And I give him my card. And he said, do you have a website? And I said, yep. And it's full of podcasts about this shit, too. And, all right, it's not time for that, all right? Everybody just needs to relax a few minutes, okay? So now we get into this discussion. How do you do that? Well, here's what I do. I tell people the truth. And it starts out with, I'm going to tell you the truth, and if you don't like it, I don't give a shit, all right? But these are the truths that come from Marines, all right? The culture of Marines. Not the culture of the Marine Corps, the institution. The culture of the human beings, right, that live in an institution, right? And there's a difference, okay? There's a difference. There's a big difference. So I said, I tell them, you know, I've been interviewing people for 3.5 years. And so about a year and a half ago, I decided I was going to write something based on all that I've learned. And that's kind of, this thing has generated into that. I said, but, right, I know you've sat through a ton of this shit, right? And he says, yeah. And I said, and I gave him the data points. You know, the place that I've done it the most, this is what. And he looks at me and he goes, oh, my God. He said, you know, everybody I've heard talk about slowing the rate of rise. Nobody talks about negatively impacting. I said, well, Yeah, that's what I talk about. I talk about turning that number south. And then I said this. I said, now, I didn't really think about it from the perspective of a first responder until the last few weeks, because I've been in touch with the Las Vegas Fire Department, and who I think is going to come down and watch it when I do it for my old battalion, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, on Thursday and Friday. Yeah, fired up about that, man. Yeah, I'm going to make my platoon stand up. Where is Charlie Company? And they'll all yell, right? Where are the Marines from 3rd Platoon and Charlie Company? Put your hands up. And I'll make them stand up. Stand the fuck up right now. The finest Marines in the Marine Corps. And if you don't like it, you can go to hell, man. Anyway. So, no, I'm excited. The first unit I ever joined in the Marine Corps. 1st Battalion, 5th Marine. So, on Thursday and Friday. And so, I said, but think about, right, I mean, what you guys see on a daily basis, right, on a weekly basis. And he said, yeah, it's pretty tough, just especially with kids, and those scenes are not pleasant. And I said, you know, the people that you're dealing with that are hysterical, right? And he said, yeah, that's hard. And I said, imagine if you could hand them something that says, hey, I know you're not ready to go there yet, but someday when you're ready, right? Let me just give you a little something to look into, right? Something to look into. And imagine if first responders could touch people like that. Now, somebody's going to tell me, well, legally that would be, you know, you can't do that. And maybe they can't. Okay? But imagine if they could, in addition to, you know, providing first aid, they could, you know, tell people something like, you know, this is not a life sentence to hell for you. I want you to know that, right? And so you can do something with it, something positive with this. So, I mean, so he and I are talking, and he said, you know, is your thing tomorrow night, is that open to the public? Can anybody come? I said, yeah, you can come. Send anybody you want. And he said, okay. He said, can I have some more of your cards? And so I gave him some more of his cards, my cards. And I said, all right, man. Either you better get in touch with me, because he gave me his card, or I'm going to get in touch with you and raise holy hell. And he said, no, I will. I said, I'm not joking either. I said, and let me tell you why I'm not joking. I'm not joking because this works, and I know it works. Okay? I know it works, and I know I can help. So make sure you get in touch. He said, I will. He said, we need something, right? Because we've done what everybody else has done, which is listen to people talk, and it just sucks. It just sucks. Okay. And so, again, post-traumatic winning, man, I cannot get away from it in any part of my life. Which is fine, because I don't want to. It's, I had a conversation with friends, over the weekend. It was awesome, right? I had actually forgotten about this, even though I helped organize it, and I didn't realize it until a couple weeks ago that, oh, I can't go from D.C. to Minnesota and go up to North Dakota because I have to be at something on Saturday in my hometown, Sacramento. And so I fly to Sacramento, and I go hang out with my high school friends. Now, we did this in the summer, and we had such a good time, but we said, hey, let's invite, you know, people from classes younger than us and older than us, guys we just hung out with. And that's who showed up. And it was hilarious. It was the loudest. It was the loudest I've ever heard at any reunion, and that's what I noticed, right? And I'd look at people and say, "Have you ever been to a reunion that's this loud?" And they're like, "No, right? No." But I mean, it was our group of friends that encompassed maybe, you know, 6 years north of us and 6 years south of us, but it was fun. It was fun. And then hanging out with my cousin Tom is always the best. And I actually even did this. I mean, they've heard so much about this, right? Because they listen on occasion. And so I showed half, the first half of it. Before my cousin Tom and I went to the reunion thing. So, Tom's wife, her name's Julie, she's watching it, and she's, like, stunned by it, okay? Right? Because Julie's known me, like, for a long time, and but she's watching this, and she's like, oh, my God. So now I said, okay, we have to stop because we have to go. And so then she gets mad at me. She says, are you going to church to thank God for giving you this? I said, well, I talk to God all the time, but I don't specifically. And then she gets pissed at me, right? She gets pissed. Tom's doing the dishes. She's yelling at me about going to church, right? And I said, well, look, if I had, you know, a priest that I wanted to listen to, right? And so then we got this argument. And so she's like wire brushing me. I said, so now you're wire brushing me because I'm doing something good? Oh, my God. Yeah. She, like, flamed on me. Right. Even use foul language. I won't even go into that. Even use foul language. Thank God I'm not scarred by stuff like that. But, yeah. Yeah. Never got pissed at me in her life. I do something good, she gets pissed at me. Yeah. That nice church-going woman. Nice church-going woman cussing me out. It was hilarious. Right? And then she went, and then she asked her husband, Tom, don't you think, and Tom kind of sided with me. He said, you know, I think Mike's doing all right. I think he figured it out. And I'm like, oh, you're going to pay for that, Tom, but I appreciate the support. So, just had an awesome time there, and got to see my cousin Patty, who's like a sister to me. She just had knee replacement surgery, man. She's out and about. You know, I'll tell you what, that's an incredible, you know, I don't know. I've had so many friends that have had joint replacement surgery. I have people that have had, you know, shoulders replaced and knees replaced and hips replaced. And they're like, they can't believe how much their pain goes away, and they can't believe how fast, you know, like the recovery is. If you feel like you can get up and walk that day, you get up and walk from hip replacement surgery. Yeah, you're on it. So it's crazy. So no, and then they get their mobility back, and it's just very, 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 very cool stuff. So yeah. So and then actually, what I did was, Patty is a fan of All Marine Radio, and she listens on occasion, and she wanted to see it. And I said, well, I did the first half this morning at Tom's house, and she said, well, tell them to get their asses up here. You could do the second half for all of us. I said, okay. So we went up to Patty's, and I actually did a synopsis of the first part and then did the second part. So it was fun to do it for my family. And I want to do it in Sacramento, which is my hometown. And so at some point, I will do it there. But, no, it was a great weekend. And then today's going to be just as cool. And one of the things that's going to be interesting, and I keep my fingers crossed because you never know who's going to show up. When I was here last time, they had a winter storm watch and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, people came out, but not in great numbers. The majority of people there were veterans, which was cool, right? That was the initial audience. Well, now, come back to your university a year later, the audience is everybody. Get everybody out here. The behavioral health folks, right, and anybody who has this in their life. And so hopefully you'll see a wider audience. And so I go do this at Boston College in January, and we'll see, you know, hopefully the audience will be similar. But we're going to check the news today, and then there's an article I want to share with you about the VA vet centers, therapists, and numbers, and blah, 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 blah. Very, very, very interesting. So, with all that said, the United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. dedicated to Tim Adams and the veterans of the University, Minnesota State University, Mankato, and for their gracious invitation, and looking forward to today. It's also dedicated, though, to a Minnesota State Trooper who will hopefully open up a door that will lead a lot of people to a better place. So with all that in mind, this is dedicated to them.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not say, it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speed. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards get the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult
challenging conditions that I can win. You gotta win.
Time to check weather in Moraineland. We'll even check it here in the land of 10,000 lakes.
Yeah.
Sunny 52 in Quantico as November has descended upon us. Partly sunny and 62 at Camp Lejeune. It's warmed up in 29 Palms. It is sunny and 56. Yeah, they were down in the 30s last week. Sunny and 47 at Camp Pendleton. On the inland side of the base, yeah, that's not the coastal side of the base. Camp Smith and Hawaii, dark cloudy and 77. Yeah, so they've warmed up a little bit. They were down by towards 70 last week. In Okinawa, dark cloudy and 73. They've cooled off. Continuing our westward movement from Okinawa, we stop in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, and it is dark, clear, and 70 degrees in Lashkar Gah. And continuing west, actually heading southwest, we go to Iraq, where it is clear, dark, and 74 in the Al-Anbar province. At the home of All Marine Radio, Costa Mesa, California, where I am not, is partly sunny and 50 degrees. In Mankato, Minnesota, it is 36 degrees under cloudy skies, looking for a high of 40 today in the land of 10,000 lakes, where I'll be all day, and I fly home tomorrow. And then have Wednesday just to do the show, and then Thursday and Friday do post-traumatic winning down at Camp Pendleton. And then Marine Corps birthday over the weekend, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And then next week I go to Las Vegas to speak at a ball. I got to rent a tux. I have to remember to do that. And then the following week I go to Yuma and do post-traumatic winning. So, yeah, exciting stuff. Anyway, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to my dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Peyton Davis. Years ago, the Iran hostage crisis began. Yeah, those of us that were alive for that won't forget that. So that began today. Check the news out. Because I'm doing this a little bit. A little bit early, I don't get the shithole weather updates, right? I haven't even got Chris from Webster. Again, if you know anybody that's in the area, 7 o'clock tonight at Minnesota State University, Mankato. Now, somebody asked me for the flyer that Tim Adams put out, and I thought I sent it, but maybe I didn't. I'm just looking at my email, and I couldn't find it. And, which bothered me a little bit. So, anyway, maybe I did send it. I did. It was in a different email. I sent it at 3:04 a.m. Yeah. That tells you what I was doing. That tells you what I was doing this morning. So, anywho, we're going to check some news headlines now. Here on, the first full week of November. Yeah. My number two son turns 30 this week, Patrick. He was not real fired up about that. I was, though. I'm like, bro, we get closer in age every year. Do you know that, right? He's like, don't stop. Do not play this game that you're about to play. And then he tried to act like it was no big deal, but I could tell it was, which made it even better. Let me read you an email I got last night. It's from a former Marine, right? Listening to the Beirut podcast, I was there in 1981-82 when the 24th MAU, we have MUs now, right? They used to be Marine Amphibious Units. They're now Marine Expeditionary Units. On the 24th MAU staff, as the S4 Alpha embarkation officer, the site of the BLT headquarters is now a parking lot. If you look at Google Earth, look for the main terminal of the airport, then draw a line directly north and find the northernmost parking lot before you see more buildings. That building was the actual MAU headquarters. It was the old firefighting training building. Really enjoy your podcast. It's like hearing the Marine Corps Gazette, but more entertaining and interesting. Semper Fi. And I asked him, I said, hey, man, would you come on and talk about it? And he says, anytime. I was there in the beginning and was in the staff meetings where many of the decisions about the rules of engagement, perimeter defense, and troop placement were decided. I also have a fairly light-hearted attitude towards our involvement there, since as the most junior staff officer, I was a special services officer, which meant I was responsible for setting up the club system, buying the beer and booze every week, and organizing the weekly boondoggle trips to the Marine Club at the embassy. I also befriended our PAO, Captain Dale Dye, who went on to become a movie star. And his name is Steve Combs. So cool stuff. Cool stuff. And again, you know, I mean, what I've grown to love about All Marine Radio, and as it continues to expand its reach, is the people that touch, and then they tell you their real life story. And it is one of the coolest parts of doing All Marine Radio, which are the people you meet and the stories they tell. And you know, again, what's cool about the Marine Corps is Marines. That's what's cool. Marine Corps, as an institution, you know, like any other one. Marines, unbelievable. Unbelievable. This just in, from Webster, Mass. Current conditions, 42 degrees expected high today, maybe 50. Winds out of the west-southwest, steady at 12. Wind chill is at 36. Bright and sunny today. Frost on the car this morning. Chris from Webster out. And then he sent a follow-up email about frost means winter. And he sent a picture of his car. Ice scraping? Come on, man. Either get a remote car starter and fire that thing up early. He's got a Marine Corps emblem on his license plate. Motivator. Yeah. Get a remote, right? Fire that son of a bitch up 20 minutes early. Windshield's clear. Everything's good. Okay? Come on, man. This is like Stone Age shit, scraping ice. Yeah. Come on. There's technology that is rescued, right? There's technology that has rescued us for the days of living like settlers, okay? Now, I feel like I should read this because Nancy wrote it on Friday, but it was too late, right? Friday was November 1st. For those pagans out there that don't know this, it is the Feast of All Souls. Uh-oh. Why is Peyton singing again? That's not supposed to happen. Anyway. So, Nancy sent this. Happy All Saints Day, Mac. In Pleasantville, on a late fall Friday, currently freezing rain to rain, 35 degrees, up to 40 maybe. Winds from the west at 14. Poncho weather, right? Travel safe and have a great weekend. The Feast of All Souls, on, which is, for those of you who don't know, including my Shino, including my cousin's wife, right? The one who wire brushed me. Like, I'm rolling around the country doing great things. What do I get from my cousin's husband? Right? I get smoked. But let me tell you, she's going to pay for that. She's going to pay for that for years, okay? Yeah. She's not, and like she was outside of her personality, which made it even better, right? Which made it even better. So, anyway. Oh, yeah, she's going to pay for that. Look, I cannot stand for that aggression. And if I do, then she'll think I'm weak, like the Iraqis would. And I cannot have that. So, she's going to have to pay. She's going to have to pay. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway. All right, we should probably check the news right now. And then there's an article that I want to kind of do a deep dive to. And so you can get a glimpse of, you know, how the VA does care and whatnot. It's a pretty interesting little article, but the first place we go, as usual, is Stars and Stripes. Now, on Monday, Stars and Stripes, like, they vacate the premises over the weekend. And so normally their Monday story is kind of lame. Top story in Stars and Stripes is, in South Korea, military cost dispute. In South Korea, military cost dispute and Trump's moves in Syria fuels doubts over U.S. commitment. I saw a story where China is now leading ASEAN, which to me is unfathomable, but the president will not engage in the Pacific, in the trade stuff, which leaves a void, and as we know, all voids are quickly filled by somebody. Next story, U.S. air power is growing alongside the Marine Corps in Australia's Northern Territory. The Enhanced Air Cooperation Initiative focused this year on the fifth-generation fighter integration, aeromedical evacuation, and aircraft maintenance. And so the story details really what's happened as the United States and Australia, starting with Marine Rotational Force Darwin, right, which has now grown to a battalion from a company, and this expansion of military cooperation in the region led by the Marine Corps with Australia. The initiative was kicked off in 2017. This is the air component focused on the fifth-generation fighter. It involved U.S. F-22 Raptor, the F-35 Lightning II, the F-16 Fighting Falcon, the F-15 Fighting Eagle Fighters, B-52 Strategic Bomber, and the C-130J Super Hercules Transports, according to the Australian Defense Forces website. Airmen improved in the program practiced joint and combined warfighting, maneuver, resiliency, and logistics, according to the website. So that's a good story in terms of American presence in the Pacific. Next story, foreign fighters transiting through Turkey could help the Islamic State regenerate, a U.S. report warns. The new skipper of the USS John McCain says the ship performed exceptionally well in its first sea trials since 2017. Everybody remembers USS McCain and the loss of life when it turned in front of a ship in the Malaccan Straits. Now, here's a story in Stars and Stripes about the rivalry and ASEAN. And again, the United States cannot disengage, you know, so, you know, going with the South China Sea comes the economic component that goes with it. This is from Nantaburi, Thailand. The rivalry between the United States and China over influence in the Asia-Pacific region was on show Monday as the two superpowers traded barbs over freedom of navigation in the region's seas. The war of words took place at the annual summit of leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, hosted this year by Thailand. The meeting allows Southeast Asian leaders to deal as a bloc with the world's major powers. At the same time, the meeting serves as a showcase for the rivalry between the United States and China, which both seek to strengthen their clout in the geographically important region. On Friday, the two countries repeated familiar charges, Beijing accusing Washington of interfering in Asian affairs and Washington accusing Beijing of violating the law of the sea and encroaching on the natural resources of other countries, both of which are true. Washington, however, found itself handicapped as President Donald Trump did not attend the meeting, setting in his place neither Vice President Mike Pence or the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, but his recently appointed National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien. Now, how the fuck does that make sense? Like, why would we insult ASEAN? And this is what General Mattis talks about, our alliances and whatnot, right? Why is the United States backhanding them? So anyway, this story talks about the back and forth that went on at the event. So let me just tell you, I just think that, you know, we're doing all this stuff militarily, right? The military piece is one line of effort in the region. Arguably, the decisive piece is the economic piece. And you got to play in that domain. You got to play in that realm. And when you choose not to send important people, you send them a message. And what you say is, you're not important. And trust me, they got the memo. They got the memo. This story is unbelievable. This is by Gidget Fuentes. Gidget married to a Marine. She's written, I want to say I used to read Gidget stuff in the San Diego Union Tribune, if I'm not mistaken, but I think she also writes for military.com. But now this is in United States Naval Institution news, USNI News, which, again, is one of my favorites because they do news. Let's see this headline. Feds indict two Navy medical officers and a sailor, allegedly in a $2 million fraud ring. Like, what? Commander Michael Barisell and former Lieutenant Commander Paul Craig are charged with conspiracy to commit fraud, three counts of wire fraud that would normally involve money, and three counts of making a false claim to obtain unearned benefits from the Traumatic Service Members Life Insurance Program, the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of California announced on Thursday. Former Master Chief Construction Mechanic Christopher Toops, who last year was indicted and charged along with four other Navy personnel in the alleged fraud ring to get TSGLI benefits totaling nearly $2 million. It also named is also named in the latest indictment. Barisell, 47, of Coronado, was a medical officer of the San Diego-based EOD Expeditionary Support Group 1 from 2010 to 2013 when he knowingly signed off on false and fraudulent TSGLI applications on behalf of multiple service members that were part of or connected to EOD ESU-1, officials said in a news release. Toops was assigned to EOD ESU-1 from September of 2010 to September of 2014. Craig of Austin, Texas, and Toops filed fraudulent TSGLI applications, officials said. To support their applications, each defendant submitted fabricated applications that included forged signatures and altered hospital records. Craig fraudulently collected $150,000 and Toops collected at least $100,000. Toops, 42, of Woodstock, Georgia, was one of five Navy service members indicted in March of 2018. I mean, wow. Again, I mean, stuff you read that you're just like, it's crazy. Estonia's prime minister committed to NATO membership. Always nice to see, right? Report to Congress, a video of the Gerald R. Ford carrier program. That's always interesting. All right, and then top stories in the Marine Corps Times, and then we'll head over to the early bird and see what the top stories are there. So, sleepy weekend for Marine Corps time. Okay. Same stories. Corps increases time in service requirements. For sergeants and staff sergeants and revamps reenlistments. So, this has been something that, you know, the Commandant has talked about. And that is, the way we do things is archaic. The way we educate, sending people to the schoolhouse, is archaic. Right? We have a small fraction of the total that goes to be educated. We've got to change that. We've got to get more people through, which means we've got to get good. We have to get great at distance learning. Reenlistment. Why do reenlistments have to go to Headquarters Marine Corps? Why can't the local commanding general authorize reenlistments? Or, for that matter, his subordinates, if people meet qualifications, blah, 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 blah. Why do we have such a cumbersome program? Right, so that is a bottom-line theme of General Berger. In an attempt to increase the experience of non-commissioned officers, the Marine Corps is preparing to increase the time in service and the time in grade requirements for promotions to sergeant and staff sergeant. Starting in January, the Corps will double the time in service requirements for Marine looking to be promoted to sergeant from 24 months. Imagine that. Now, why do you think that is? Because you have sergeants that have been in the Marine Corps for 2 years, right? And what the Marine Corps is finding that, I mean, they just don't know enough. They don't have enough leadership experience. And you're asking novices to wear the rank of sergeants. Now, back in the day, if somebody was close to that, you knew they were just an exceptional human being, man. And, I mean, one of the guys I know like that is Mike Etor. And he's an exceptional human being. Mike's about to publish a book, so I need to get him back on the program. But, yeah. But even then, I've never even heard of that. Become a sergeant in 24 months? Sergeants looking to be selected for staff sergeant, time and service requirements will increase from 48 months to 60 months. So you got to be in the Marine Corps for 5 years before you can get promoted, right? Quote, we need to get back to historical norms. Colonel Christopher Escamilla, branch head for manpower programs and budget section of Marine Corps Manpower and Reserve Affairs, told Marine Corps Times in an interview on Wednesday. Historically, it's the four-year mark plus or minus where you become selected to sergeant. And for right now, we're trending to be less than half of that. For some MOSs, quite less than that. What? I'm a sergeant, but I've only been in the Marine Corps for 3 years. I had Lance Corporals that had like more than 2 years time in service. Lance Corporal. Amazing. The change makes the promotion process more focused on experience and having the no-kidding subject matter expert at the tactical level. Man, you can see, I mean, think about this. Okay, we talked about how you get to where the Marine Corps is today, right? Which is novices leading novices. So even, and what I would say is a novice, you don't have company formation, so you don't see the company gunning and the company first sergeant. You have your corporals, and in this case, sergeants. But the sergeant really is the equivalent of a good corporal. He's a novice too. And you wonder how this thing gets crooked. Amazing. While the MAR admin did come out with more restrictive promotion requirement, it also includes changes to the reenlistment process that seek to make the process easier for bright Marines in the hopes of improving retention. Marines across the service who demonstrate high levels of proficiency and talent must be given the most efficient means by which to request and be approved for reenlistment and subsequently be provided opportunities to excel at critical leadership roles. The order will allow many Marines to seek reenlistment approval from their commanding generals without sending their package all the way to Headquarters Marine Corps, and will provide a select few with the opportunity to reenlist up to a year early, the Marine Corps, Commandant of the Marine Corps David Berger said in October. Once the Marine Corps determines how many open reenlistment spaces each MOS has, known as boat spaces, quotas on how many enlistments may be approved by commanding generals will be sent out. At that point, Marines in Tier 1 or Tier 2 of the First Term Alignment Program will have the opportunity to seek approval for their reenlistment packages from their commanding general. Tier 3 Marines will still have to send their packages to Headquarters Marine Corps. So, I mean, all that sounds good. I mean, I guess what I'm at a loss for is, how did we get to those places where you had such junior people, and who thought that was a good idea? And why was that done? Was that done in the name of retention? All right. Next headline. Marine believed to be the oldest surviving Marine from Iwo Jima dies. The reported oldest living Marine veteran from the Battle of Iwo Jima died Tuesday at the age of 103. John Moon, who graduated in 1939 from Western Illinois University with a Bachelor of Science degree in chemistry, was motivated to join the Marine Corps after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Moon was inspired to join the service by his football coach, Rock Hansen. When he was 102 years old, the Purple Heart recipient went back to his alma mater in 2018 to sing the Star Spangled Banner at the Basketball Military Appreciation Night. John was a well-known and loved member of the community, his obituary states. Many will miss hearing his amazing singing voice, watching him ride his three-wheel bike, and his fantastic attitude. A little more than 2 years after the Japanese attacked Hawaii, Moon enlisted in the Marine Corps on December 29th of 1943. How could I not enlist? Making the world and my family safe from any more wars? Moon wrote. He completed training at Camp Pendleton, like just about everybody did, was assigned to the 5th Marine Division. He then deployed to Iwo Jima, leaving the States his wife, Beatrice B. Nichols, who passed away in 1998, and their first son. They later have two more children. Moon arrived on D-Day, February 19, 1943, as the 5th Division did, and subsequently was wounded in the battle. His obituary does not specify the nature of his wound. He was discharged from the Marine Corps in September of 1945. He returned to his hometown of Malcolm, Illinois, ran a cafe and a candy store. He taught driver's education at Malcolm, Illinois High School, was a carpenter and a school bus driver, and sold life insurance and served several terms as an alderman for Macomb City Council. He sang in his church's choir and drove the church car to pick up the elderly for Sunday services. Moon died Tuesday at a nursing care facility in his hometown. Right? We should all be so fortunate to live a life like that. The president declared all of November, as Veterans and Military Families Month. So, you got that going for you. All right. Top five stories in early bird. Don't take a break. And then I'm going to come back, and I want to share an article with you that I saw that, to me, is pretty amazing. Number one, U.S. soldiers relocate to Army's new hub in Korea as North Korea builds up weapons that can reach it. Number two, first female airman enters training pipeline to be a combat controller. That's kind of surprising to me that has not happened before, right? Known, I believe, as JTACs in the Air Force, right? I'm surprised that hadn't already happened. Number three, Trump lets Navy chief off the hook over offer to fire me. U.S. Navy Secretary Richard Spencer says Donald Trump told him to keep working on persistent problems with the service's costliest ship, freeing him from the pledge that you can fire me if the aircraft carrier's long-delayed weapons elevators weren't installed and working by August. Now, let me just say this about Richard Spencer. He made that because Huntington Ingalls Industries told them that they would be ready by June. Yeah. Yeah, he's got the documentation to prove it. All right, they told him. So give them a couple months, right, to solve a few extra problems. And then I want to say in about April, May, they said, yeah, it's not going to be ready till beyond 2020. How about that? It's amazing. It's amazing. Number four, Breaking Bad at Kirtland. OSI investigates suspected fake meth handed out to trick-or-treaters. Yeah. It seems someone at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico may have gone as Walter White in Halloween. Like, are you kidding me? Like, somebody thinks this is a funny joke? So, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. I don't understand how something like this would happen because most trick-or-treaters, right? Most trick-or-treaters are accompanied by their parents who come up to the door with them. Some trick-or-treaters going door-to-door at Kirtland's non-base residential area last night ended up with small plastic pill baggies containing crystalline blue substance. Kirtland spokesman Eva Blaylock confirmed to Air Force Times on Friday. Although the substance resembles the blue sky crystal methamphetamine cooked up by the anti-hero of the show Breaking Bad, which was set in nearby Albuquerque, Blaylock said it was believed to be rock candy. That's really funny. You know? Maybe if you have a Halloween party along that theme of Breaking Bad, and everybody knows it, and adults are there, that might be moderately humorous. Oh, look at that. How funny. Right? But handing it out to kids, right? Their parents maybe not savvy to it, and other people saying, hey. Anyway. right? I can fix a lot of things. I can't fix stupid. So that stupid people have to be punished. Military needs a new personnel system if it wants to stop the bleeding of highly skilled troops. I don't know that you're going to stop the bleeding of highly skilled troops. What are you going to do? Right? I mean, look, financially, the DOD has changed. It's now, what, 40% of everybody is married, right, with kids? So you used to pay somebody a simple salary. Now you got to pay everybody BAH and all the rest of it. You got to provide health care for everybody. I mean, that's huge. So what are you going to do? And this is the argument that cities and counties make, to pay exorbitant salaries. Oh, we can't lose them. Yeah, you can. Next man up. Find the next person. Get them trained. Right? Well, that means we're a feeder to larger cities. It's always meant that. What are you going to do? Break the bank and try to compensate your people to keep, you know, a half dozen people that can be replaced? Well, yeah. No, we're not doing that. Right? Here's a few notes on overseas operations. Well, okay. Armed drones to fly out of Niger Air Base, now operational after delayed completion. So, again, that's follow-up to a story of Green Berets being killed in Africa. Right? North Korea says it test fired a new multiple rocket launcher. Congratulations to them. In Syria's teeming ISIS prisons, broken men, child inmates, and orders to break free. Next headline. U.S. envoy in Afghanistan seeking prisoner exchange to free two hostages held by the Taliban, according to Afghan officials. A few headlines from Syria-Turkey. Joint Turkish and Russian patrols begin in the Syrian region. McConnell urges caution on Turkey sanctions. Why is Mitch McConnell going soft on Turkey? Turkey has to decide, you know, doesn't want to, it has to pick a side, man. You can't enjoy the memberships of NATO membership and then turn your back on the alliance. Turkey says it will send back Islamic State prisoners even if citizenships are revoked. All right, that's the look at your news today. Don't touch that dial. When we come back, you're gonna hear a really interesting story about VA therapists, about their workload, as we continue here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, first full week of November in the year of our Lord 2019. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next here on a Monday. On your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Kryptonite. Three doors down, I think. Kryptonite, no bueno, man. Especially around Superman. Is there really something, is that like a real thing, kryptonite? Or is it just a literary invention? Well, I watch the world look to the dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do. After all, I would have to be something to do with you. I really don't mind. Going to talk about an article I saw about vet centers and caseloads and stuff like that, but I want to hear the refrain. So, anyway, so I don't know where I saw this yesterday, but I did. Maybe I saw it last night. Oh, no, I saw it earlier this morning when I was thrashing around and couldn't sleep. All right, headline. This is from NBC News. Former therapist, VA is hurting mental health care for combat veterans at its vet centers. Okay, now let me tell you the problem I have. It's a headline, so again, there's many places that PTSD comes from, and you don't help the cause by PTSD linking it to combat veterans. There's other ways, rape, right? A whole host of other things. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox, right? The story's by Courtney Koob and Richard Gardella. From a small office, former Lieutenant Colonel Ted Blickwedle is conducting a self-appointed mission. To call attention to what he claims is a serious problem inside a little-known Department of Veteran Affairs program that provides free mental health care to combat veterans. From 2009 until retiring last year, Blickwedle, a former Marine Corps logistics officer, worked as a counselor and therapist at a VA clinic in Rhode Island called a vet center. Now, we know what vet centers are, right? That facility is one of 300 that the VA operates around the United States. The program includes 80 mobile vet centers, 20 vet center outstations, and almost 1,000 community access points. The program began after the Vietnam War as a readjustment counseling service. Its purpose was and is to help combat veterans readjust to civilian life at home after returning from deployments. The centers provide cognitive behavioral talk therapy and organize social activities and events designed to get vets out of the house and connected with other vets. All the services are for free. Blickwedle himself, a combat veteran, said he got a master's in social work so he could help veterans as a therapist. He told NBC News he found working at a vet center to be a wonderful experience. We witnessed huge changes in veterans. Some of them, their lives completely did a 180. I personally had veterans tell me that I've saved their lives, that I made a difference for them. Ooh, what does that sound like? Huh? You know, boys and girls, you know what that sounds like. Anyway, his first name's Ted. But Blickwedle quit his job after he said management upped counselors' workloads by requiring more counseling visits at a level that interfered with the quality of care they could provide to their clients. The VA's effort to make its counselors see more clients each week is another sign of a veterans' healthcare system that is trouble coping with an increased demand for services for millions of veterans. Government data shows a growing demand for mental health treatment by veterans. In 2011, more than 1.3 million veterans received specialized mental health treatment from the VA. 6 years later, the annual number is 400,000 higher. So, what is that as a percent? Stand by, 1.3 million. We could do 1.3 divided by 4, can't we? I think we can. All right, so that's what we'll do. 1.3, no, clear. 0.4 divided by 1.3 equals 31% increase. All right, there you have it. According to the VA, vet centers had 307,000, let's round it to 308,000 unique clients in fiscal year 2019, a 3% increase from fiscal year 2018. And 1.9 million visits in fiscal year 2019. All right. So you had unique clients going 1.9 million visits there, right? And then that was a 1.5% decrease over fiscal year 18. So they didn't go as much, but statistically 1.5%, not very much. Right? In 2015, an internal VA report prepared by a volunteer group of vet center leaders and counselors analyzed the clinical capacity workload for vet centers and found that many of our vet centers have exceeded their real capacity. The report obtained by NBC News recommended that the productivity standards for counselors be set at 18 visits, clinical hours, from clients per week, two fewer visits than the 20 visit per week standard at the time. So a visit, I think, is an hour. So 20 visits is 20 hours of your 40-hour work week. So you have half your work day is tied up in desert. Not too much, according to this guy. And I got to get him on the, I got to find, track him down and get him, see if he'll come on the program. According to a VA employee with knowledge of the report and its conclusions, the Vet Center National Management disregarded the report and its findings. It was dead on arrival, the source said. Instead, a year later, the VA significantly raised the number of required visits. A VA official issued a memorandum in March of 2016 to all Vet Center managers, notifying them of new productivity and performance standards for counselors and setting a minimum expectation for the number of counseling sessions they would conduct each week. The memo specified the minimum of counselors for counselors would be 30 readjustment counseling visits per week. That's 30 hours, 6 per day. Based on a 5-day work week, the number represented a 50% increase from the previous expectation of 20 per week. When Blickwedel learned about the new minimum target, he felt it was too high and thought it would create an ethical dilemma for counselors. The dilemma is choosing between I'm going to do what I need to do to meet those metrics or actually do what's best for the veteran. So I guess I would have to understand. So you sit there. And what do you do? Once a patient leaves, what do you do? Does that have to be your notes have to be dictated, right? How much time does that mean? All right. So after raising concerns at its local and regional managers, Blickwedel wrote an email to Mike Fisher, who heads the Vet Center program as the VA's chief readjustment counseling officer. It was Fisher who had commissioned the 2015 report that had recommended lowering the number of client visits. Blickwedel told Fisher that the new hire minimums had made him decide to retire early. The bureaucracy has degraded the ability of clinicians to properly perform their duties as counselors and therapists, Blickwedel wrote. Ultimately, the veterans suffer since they cannot be given the best care they deserve under these circumstances. He sued his local managers and colleagues and others. After a week without a response, Blickwedel forwarded the email to all 1,300 VA Vet Center counselors and their managers, encouraging them to express their concern and provide any constructive solutions you might have. Fisher replied all to that email, thanking Blickwedel for his message. Quote, you bring up an important point in that we all need to find more ways to talk to each other, bring up and discuss issues, and most importantly, find solutions, he wrote. Fisher wrote that this conversation must continue, but pointed Vet Center staff to do so through submissions to a VA website and not through email. Blickwedel wasn't satisfied with the response and expressed stronger criticisms in a second mass email. Quote, whoever is coming up with these production standards is seriously out of touch with what is happening in the field and how it is adversely impacting those of us who are doing the day-to-day therapeutic work. I strongly encourage everyone to speak up and respond, reply all with your comments so your voices are heard. 3 days after that, Blickwedel said, the VA cut off his computer access. But before it did, Blickwedel said, he received supportive feedback from Vet Center counselors across the country. He showed NBC News emails from 57 counselors from 45 Vet Centers in 25 states. I was distraught reading the responses, all saying the exact same thing that I was saying. Thank you for speaking up. These are things that need to be said, but we're afraid to say things like you did because of what we have witnessed with retaliation by management. In the emails, Blickwedel showed NBC News, counselors linked the higher minimum to a broader change in the Vet Center program's culture. There's been a clear shift to a business model that is not conducive to optimum care. Our leadership has ruthlessly fixated on productivity numbers using fear and intimidation to force compliance. NBC News spoke to current and former VA employees about Blickwedel's concerns, most but not all, through referrals from Blickwedel. Almost all agreed with Blickwedel and said problems are continuing. One current Vet Center official and one current counselor, however, who spoke on a condition of anonymity, said the standards were and are reasonable. The official suggested any discontent reflects poor local management at specific Vet Center. Fisher has run the Vet Center program since 2016, according to his official VA biography. A combat veteran, he served in the Pennsylvania National Guard and was deployed to Iraq in 2005. In an interview at VA headquarters in Washington, Fisher acknowledged sharing concerns from other counselors about the standards, but said Blickwedle's concerns were overblown and did not reflect the views of most. All right, now, pretty long article. Let me get to the conclusion. Blickwedle has now taken his concerns to Congress. At the request of two senators, he approached Jack Reed, Democrat of Rhode Island. I think Reed is the minority, what do you call that guy, who's the head of the minority guy, the head minority guy, meaning Democratic guy, on the Senate Armed Service Committee, and John Tester of Montana. The Government Accountability Office is now investigating how the standards are impacting Vet Center counselors and their care of combat veterans. Meanwhile, Blickwedle is continuing to speak out. He says he is motivated by a strong belief that the nation's combat veterans deserve better. They've given their lives for the country, our freedoms, he said, his voice choking with emotion. Veterans not potentially receiving the best care they can because counselors are having to worry about these metrics, it's unfortunate. It's just not right. And fundamentally, it needs to be changed. So, no, I thought that was an interesting article. I wanted to spend a little time with it. Because I can tell you from my own personal experience that and this would have been around that time, 2015, 2016, that the guy I was seeing in Bill Pearson in West L.A., who was great to me, he was telling me the same thing. He said, yeah, I'll be here till 6 or 7 tonight, and I do that every day I'm here so I can see more patients. And he said it was, and they didn't have enough therapists in the office, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's the one that told me, yeah, the model is, you know, sit down with them and then, you know, get them the medications they need and get them to group therapy. So, I don't know. It's just when you look at it, and that's why, in my opinion, post-traumatic wing is so important, right? You know, when you're trying to cope and you can talk to other veterans who can tell you the truth and then give you the drug that you need, which is not in, that doesn't come out of a jar or a pill bottle, I think that's important. I think it's significant. I think it's important. So, anyway. All right. That'll do it for today. Little check of the news, little expanded news coverage, and we'll see you tomorrow. And then the show gets back to normal on Wednesday. So, on this Monday, the first full day of November, thank you very much for listening. All right. And I'm trying to track down Andy Milburn. He's in the Philippines. And to talk about the al-Baghdadi raid. And stuff like sensitive site exploitation and the pursuit phase of this stuff. So I'm trying to get him on. It'll be interesting. The other thing I'm going to do right now is try to get, and they won't be pretty with pictures and stuff, but I'm trying to get all the different things I did last week on the website. So I've got a little bit of time before I go speak. Not much. I'll try to do that. I got to iron a shirt and get my ass over to the University of Minnesota Mankato on time. So, with all that said and lots to do, I have a break between when I speak and then later on when I speak tonight. So, I will come back here and I will get all those shows up on the website. So, start looking for them. If you're a podcast listener and didn't get a chance to listen to it last week, they will be there by later on today. So, have a great day on a Monday. From Mankato, Minnesota, All Marine Radio is over and out.